the volume.
The Colin Cowherd Podcast brought to you by FanDuel. It's never been easier to play fantasy on FanDuel. Whether you love basketball, golf, soccer, or any fantasy sport, there is a contest for every fan. FanDuel, more ways to win. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Monday morning podcast. So I'm going to get to Tyler Dunn and talk 25 minutes of Green Bay insight. Also, some thoughts on Zach Wilson. The Jets and the Packers scrimmaged for a week and had their game, and Zach's looked pretty good so far. So my first thought, I want to talk Niners-Chargers, which most of you, I imagine, watch Sunday night. I thought Easton Stick, the Chargers backup, was the best quarterback on the field. Jimmy Garoppolo obviously has an injury issue, and that's well documented. You know, one of the things Garoppolo also struggles with, and this is fairly common knowledge for anybody that watches the Niners, is he's hot and cold with his accuracy. I thought his accuracy was really poor in the drive that I watch with Jimmy Garoppolo. And that's why Kyle Shanahan, a couple of years ago, in that drive to the Super Bowl, took the football out of his hands. You know, Garoppolo is not talented enough to stave off Trey Lance if Trey Lance had played an entire year of college football. But Trey Lance, of all the young quarterbacks, to me, looks the most overwhelmed and uneven. Now, remember, that's important because Trey Lance has arguably the best offensive coach of all the rookie quarterbacks and the best offensive line of all the rookie quarterbacks, and he's struggled the most. This all comes down to a kid who just simply has not played football in 2 years. And when he did play, it was not a quarterback-reliant offense. It was very much the Alabama of that division of football. Alabama's won national titles with quarterbacks that have not been drafted, have not even signed unrestricted free agent contracts. That's North Dakota State. So, you know, when I look at Trey Lance, I see a really big, strong, talented athlete. But even with Kyle Shanahan, those weapons and that offensive line, he's not ready to play. Zach Wilson's ready to play. Justin Fields is ready to play. Trevor Lawrence is going to be ready to play. Mac Jones, I think it's good enough, his accuracy and understanding of New England's playbook. He's ready to play. There's a lower ceiling. I don't think Trey is ready to play at all. And that's the toughest division in football. So that's a real issue. So Garoppolo's going to be the starter. But having watched San Francisco now for a couple of preseason games, I'm selling a little stock. They're a little uneven. Garoppolo's accuracy remains an issue. And Trey, of all the young quarterbacks, I mean, let's be honest, Trey Lance should be the most effective of all these young quarterbacks. Justin Fields in Chicago has a regrettable offensive line in front of him. Trevor Lawrence has a bad roster. Zach Wilson has a bad roster. Trey Lance should be crushing this, and he's just not ready. Easton Stick was a significantly more poised quarterback in that game last night. Significantly more poised when they were both playing against twos. Now, this is something else I want to address. It's very hard. It's the Sean McVay effect. McVay refused to play any starters several years ago in the preseason, and instead of hurting the Rams, they started 8-0. So now he's the Pied Piper of the don't play starters movement. This preseason, not only are all but one or two or three teams not playing starters, they're going to backups by the beginning of the second quarter. So outside of Trey Lance, all these quarterbacks look fantastic. And we know they're not all going to be fantastic. Tua looks great. And Zach Wilson looks great. Zach Wilson's going to have a lot of rough Sundays in the NFL. So it's very hard for me to really judge anybody. But I've always said it's easier to spot bad or struggling than it is to spot very good. You can be fooled with very good. Trey Lance isn't ready to play. Garoppolo's accuracy remains an issue. And I just think a little less of the Niners today because of it. Tyler Dunn in about 5 minutes. All right, so I spent the weekend in Vegas, went to the Manny Pacquiao fight. I'll talk about that this week. Many of you know I had formerly called wrestling fans booger eaters, and many of you still do eat your boogers. That goes without saying. I do not. Some of you still do. But the minute I created the volume and hired Renee Paquette, she's kind of our North Star. She really symbolizes what I want the volume to be, which is we're not doing journalism here. It's an entertainment company. And as I make several hires over the next couple of years, that will become increasingly clear. We're an entertainment company. So my former agent, Nick Kahn, is now the president of WWE. So he came to me a couple of months ago and said, hey, SummerSlam, you want to bring the volume out and do your first live event? And I'm like, wait, that's why I hired Renee Paquette. Absolutely. So let me just say, it was an absolute blast. Wrestling fans cracked me up. There was 46,000 there. The most amazing thing about professional wrestling, this is the second event I've ever been to, is the production quality, not only that you see, but what you don't behind the scenes. It's unbelievable. This is a 52-week production with no weeks off. And I would sign up to do SummerSlam for a decade. 2 days every summer, July or August. I loved the people that came out to support us. I thought it was a blast. And listen, the way I look at July and August with sports, if you had a long drive contest in golf between Bryson DeChambeau and Brooks Koepka, I am sending the volume sports to cover it. If somebody decides to jump over 35 school buses, I am sending the volume sports to cover it. July and August, we are looking for different. And I thought SummerSlam was a big hit and certainly a huge hit for the volume. So thanks to everybody that supported us. All right. Aaron Rodgers last week said a week before training camp, he was 50-50 on retiring. I thought it was inarguably a bad move. And I want to bring in a guy who's not a suck up, who covers the Packers with objectivity, Tyler Dunn. And I want to spend about 15 minutes talking about the Packers, their game against the Jets, and a little Chicago Bears. So here we go. All right, Tyler Dunn, founder of the Go Long newsletter. Visit golongtd.com to subscribe. It's worth it. And co-host the Go Long podcast. He's the one reporter for the Packers who I've always felt would give you the straight skinny. Increasingly, I was talking to Bill Simmons about this when I went to SummerSlam. I said there's so many young people in broadcasting, and they tend to be very much pro player that, you know, sometimes if a coach coaches a guy hard, that coach is terrible. And they also tend to be homerific. And Tyler's not. He covers the Packers, but gives it to you straight, no BS. Again, golongtd.com to subscribe. It's absolutely worth it. So let's start with this. Before we get into the Packers, the Jets were in town, Zach Wilson. So Jordan Love's not playing, Aaron Rodgers not playing. Zach Wilson now, we got two starts. And you know, it's funny, Tyler, we do kind of know it's the Sean McVay effect. A lot of these coaches are not only refusing to play starters, they're going to the third string at the start of the second quarter. So every quarterback, except maybe Trey Lance, who's got like, you know, one start in 2 years, has looked magnificent. So let's preface it with, this is a weird cultural change in the NFL where outside of Belichick, seemingly nobody's playing starters and fewer playing big-time backups. But what did you take from Zach Wilson? What did you hear? What did you see afterward? Your thoughts on it?
I mean, I guess I saw what everybody else saw in that game, right? He looked really good. He looked like a quarterback going through his progressions. The ball was coming out fast. He was hitting Corey Davis. That's something that they hope to see when the games count. And then talking to his coaches at BYU, they made a point to say, this isn't Johnny Manziel. Like Johnny Manziel in college, like, look, he made a lot of magnificent plays. He ran around, he created, there's a lot of improvisation, but in retrospect, it was a lot of the chicken with his head cut off kind of stuff on offense. They really said that this is a quarterback who did that kind of stuff, like within the offense, within a plan, that he literally was looking at film with them up to games and saying, all right, end of the first half, they're going to be in this defense. The backside safety is going to do this. If I roll to the right, I'm going to chuck it deep left because there's going to be a short, slight, tiny little window there where I can make that play happen with my arm strength. So he's got some rare talent. You can see why they took him second overall.
Yeah, I mean, the ball comes out quickly. Marino had it. Aaron Rodgers had it. There's been quarterbacks, you know, who weren't huge stars. Some guys look different when they throw. He certainly does. Now, the Packers had practices all, you know, all week with the Jets. You had several practices to look at. And, you know, the Jets had a really bad week. They lose their top edge rusher. Denzel Mims is not healthy. They lose a safety, at least for the time being. But did you learn anything about the Packers during that week against the Jets? Because the fans don't see that, right? We watch games. I'm watching the NFL Network. What did you see during the week from the Packers?
Through training camp, I've tried to talk to players, talk to my sources in Green Bay to get a sense for how they look. And the sense I get is that, you know, at least on the field, everything kind of picked up where they left off. Granted, Aaron Rodgers staged something we haven't really seen in quite some time in my lifetime anyways, where the best player, the reigning MVP, wanted the hell out of there, as you know. I mean, he wanted out. Absolutely. And he was willing to retire. I think up to that Friday, he's telling the truth. He was willing to leave the team, and he's back, but there's still a lot of bad blood there. I think we could see drama at some point this season. I think he's gone after this season. I think Green Bay should have traded him, taken their picks, taken their players, and just moved on. But in this last dance kind of run, everything I hear is there's no problems in leaving the locker.
I got into this discussion the other day, you know, psychology 101 about Aaron Rodgers with a friend. And, you know, he's in the NFL. He's not high ranking, but he's got a good sense of the league. And it's kind of projecting. Aaron almost feels like he wants everybody to know that he doesn't need football. He's above it. I could do Jeopardy. I like music. I like travel. I've got enough money. By the way, he's had issues with his family. Their criticism has been he sort of acts like he's above us. I think when Aaron comes out and says it's 50-50, Tyler, I think it shrinks the market. My friend said this. He said, listen, man, football's hard. Like, what general manager is going to roll the dice even with Aaron? I mean, Derek Carr's less talented, but he's also cheaper, and he's 100% in. I thought that comment from Aaron that, you know, I'm 50-50, I'm into it. So Green Bay, which is well-run, he's 50-50. If you go to Denver and you have some injuries on the offensive line, do I have you? Are you there? Are you a baller or are you a Baylor? Were you surprised at all that he went public with a 50-50 comments?
I'm surprised that he went public with it, but this is who Aaron Rodgers has always been. I mean, this goes back to, you know, early in his career. I mean, those problems with Mike McCarthy, it started back when he was winning Super Bowl, the Super Bowl, and winning his first MVP. He didn't respect his head coach. And behind the scenes, he was trashing his head coach. He's telling people close to him, like, he's sending in the wrong plays. He's sending in the wrong formations. He's taking all this credit when I really should be getting all the credit for running the show. Maybe he's right, but this is the kind of stuff that's been percolating for a while. I think he reached a point in his career and his life where he just doesn't give a damn. He doesn't care. He thinks he is above it, to your point, Colin. I think that he believes I'm a three-time MVP. People can take it or leave it, but this is how I feel. And it is, I will say, it's nice to kind of see the truth come out a little bit. People are seeing the real Aaron Rodgers here, and it's somebody who holds a grudge unlike anybody I've ever covered in professional sports. As you noted, I mean, he has cut family out. He has cut friends, his best friends out. I mean, and I've reported on it. I mean, look, when his best friends doesn't show up to the wedding, this friend doesn't find out until right before. Grandfather's funeral, who he used to be really close with, doesn't go to that. Sends the Christmas presents back. This is all back in 2014. All the bad blood is still there with people close to him. So that, if that's who you are in your personal life, I mean, hey, you can't completely compartmentalize. If he's pissed off at Brian Gutekunst, that doesn't just go away. He can't pretend that away. And to his credit, he didn't pretend it away at his press conference. You can tell that bad blood is still there with the one person that made him want to get the hell out of Green Bay all offseason.
There's a reason FanDuel Sportsbook is America's number one sportsbook. The app is really easy to use. Great odds on all different betting markets, unique fun bet types like same game parlay. That's the best thing they have, in my opinion, same game parlays. And always on promotions let you get more out of every game action. And if you win on FanDuel, they pay you in as little as 24 hours. In addition to the parlay insurance, if you haven't tried FanDuel Sportsbook yet, new users can place your first bet risk-free. That's right, new users, $1,000 back in site credit if your first bet doesn't win. Just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app, sign up with the promo code Colin to get in on the action. That's FanDuel Sportsbook, promo code Colin. 21 plus and present in Colorado, Indiana, New Jersey, Virginia, or West Virginia. First online real money wager only for risk-free bet. Refund issued as non-withdrawable site credit that expires in 7 days. Max refund, $25 per game. Restrictions apply. See sportsbookfanduel.com for details. Gambling problem? 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana, 1-800-GAMBLER in Jersey, Virginia, Colorado, or visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net in West Virginia. Well, I remember when I used to criticize him 7 years ago, and I got a lot of heat from Green Bay media, and I knew my sources were good, so I didn't doubt it. And so I would, you know, and it was nothing against Bob McGinn and people who had been there forever, but I knew they had to know what I know because I had it from an agent. I had it from somebody on the team, a player. I had it somebody that was formerly a coach on the team and left. And they're like, he's a pain in the ass. And he's really, you know, he's difficult to coach. But there is something to be said that when you, his overall theme, Aaron's overall theme is, I don't need anybody. I don't need my family. I don't need football. I don't need. And that's projecting. Like that, there is some inner conflict with Aaron Rodgers, and I don't have any interest guessing, but you picked up on it 6 or 7 years ago. I also think he's so talented. It's almost, when he hangs out with Hollywood celebrities, it almost makes sense. It's very Hollywood. He's the difficult, brooding actor. He's Brando, where you know he's just a sensational talent. And because of that, he doesn't have to memorize his lines like Brando. Like he can be difficult. I mean, when would you get players to regularly talk about it off the record with you 6, 7 years ago?
Not so much 6, 7 years ago. You know, when I was on the beat at the Journal Sentinel, it was almost kind of like body language and reading between the lines, because a teammate in that locker room, they're not going to just come out and trash a league MVP, a quarterback, somebody who's going to make them a lot of money, somebody who's going to win a lot of games. But you could kind of tell that, you know, in terms of those relationships in the building, in the locker room, you know, it's not necessarily as tight as maybe it was between Brett Favre and his teammates, where they're going to run through a wall for the guy. I don't think those bonds were as strong. And I think it kind of happened over time when, you know, a lot of those veterans that were on the team in 2010, 2011, 2012 started to leave. He's kind of the oldest guy in the room. You know, he's old enough to be people's fathers. And at this point in that locker room, I don't know if he can relate to a lot of guys on that level. But, you know, to your point, I think that, yeah, he just looks at it as, is this person going to help me get to where I want to get in terms of all-time greatness, being a special transcendent talent? And if you don't fit into that calculation in his mind, then see ya. Like, if you piss him off, see ya. And he just has this narrow focus that a lot of the greats have, right? And if you're the Packers, you're going to put up with a certain amount of this to a degree because he's so good, because he's so talented. You're going to put up with the drama. You're going to put up with him, you know, calling you Jerry Krause and all the text messages. I just thought that this offseason, push kind of came to shove. If I'm Green Bay and Trey Lance, who's on our TV right now, if he's fetching 3 firsts, what are you getting for Aaron Rodgers? Is it really worth it for one more year with somebody who's 50-50, who, if things go south, what's going to happen with him play to play? I get it. You know, you want to win a Super Bowl. It's all about winning a Super Bowl, but doesn't seem worth it to me, especially with somebody who's 1-4 in the NFC Championship game and has only won one Super Bowl.
You know, I think just in life, if you feel you're committed and you're not getting the support or you're better than the surrounding people, there's a protective mechanism that people use that, okay, I don't give a shit either. And I thought after the 2020 draft, when they went to the NFC Championship, were bullied by the Niners twice that year and the Chargers, by the way, and they went and got a quarterback a running back that didn't need a blocking tight end. It was a developmental draft by and large. And I thought, wow, that hurts. And I think he's always been a brooding figure, but I thought after that, it felt like it went to another stage. It's like, come on, I need playmakers. Like, I need people that help me. Russell Wilson had just gotten the year before DK Metcalf. You know, Brady's asking for and getting, you know, guys like Leonard Fournette or a right tackle, Tristan Wirfs. I may be, you know, dramatizing this, but I feel Aaron's difficult, but I thought the 2020 draft, he just said, I'm out. Like, okay, I'm not giving you everything I have. You just went and drafted players that will have zero impact for 2 years. That I really feel, and maybe I'm being hyperbolic, but I kind of feel that draft changed the entire relationship.
It absolutely did. I think you nailed it. And this is a quarterback who is looking for every possible slight out there. I mean, he's a quarterback who's recording his one-on-one interviews with people, who's reading every article about him, who still remembers being slighted back in high school and college, and he uses all of this. I mean, I'm really tight with Bob McGinn, who you mentioned. I can remember Aaron in the locker room, you know, intercepting Bob, and because he was upset that Bob wrote in a column once that Aaron knows how to manipulate people in situations, which turns out to be true. I mean, we're seeing that. Very, very true. So his antenna's up all the time. So he's, you know, very, very ultra sensitive to this. I mean, there's a member of the front office who told me a couple of years ago, it was in the story I wrote at Bleacher Report, that, you know, it's kind of strange that somebody this talented cares this much about all of that when he's so good, when he really should just be like Tom Brady and all these guys, say, you know, screw it, whatever. Nothing's going to bother me. I'm Aaron freaking Rodgers. But it's that double-edged sword. He's going to use it, right? So maybe Brian Gutekunst knew, okay, we're going to draft Jordan Love. It's going to piss him off. He's going to win MVP. And, you know, we'll deal with whatever comes with that. And he took that. But you also should know it could get to this point where he's trying to force his way out. I mean, he tried to force his way out of that draft, to your point. And we can debate the merits of the pick. You know, I think there were signs maybe in 2019 at the end of that season that Aaron Rodgers, you know, he didn't look that sharp in that Lions season finale.
He didn't.
The NFC Championship game, they get blown out. He tells Matt LaFleur at halftime, I got it. You know, just told him, I'm calling the plays from now on. I mean, maybe that was sprinkled in there and they saw some red flags. There were signs, and okay, you piss him off. You know what's going to happen when he plays pissed off. He's going to play really, really well. And now it just got to this point. Maybe they didn't expect him to take it this far because it got really messy.
By the way, do you think his relationship now with Matt LaFleur after the NFC Championship? I mean, again, I say this. I just feel like the handcuffs are off with Aaron. When he went 50-50 comment, I thought, I've got to stop being nice. Like, that's weird. I can't even fathom Russell Wilson saying that. Peyton Manning, you know, has four neck surgeries. You could not pull him off the field. I also have a story that I'm going to – I will eventually say it, but I won't say it now because I have somebody I want to protect. But, you know, Aaron screwed over kind of a legendary quarterback in the last 18 months on a charity event, sort of no-showed.
You hear those stories a lot with Aaron Rodgers.
You have?
Similar, yes.
Yeah, so I heard it this weekend, and it was from a absolutely great source. So, you know, I kind of feel like with Aaron, once you go 50-50, I'm gonna talk about and report on you differently. Like, dude, you're not in Russell Wilson's class. You're not in Brady's. Like, that's just not leadership. Leadership is not telling a company, your employee base, I may be with you, I may be not. So I just wonder, do you think he and LaFleur, how good is it? Scale of 1 to 10. It'll never be 10 with Aaron. It would probably be never in its best days a 9. Do you think it was dinged a little after the NFC Championship?
Yes. And just before I forget too, you're right on with, I think it's kind of like that victim mentality. When you say, I don't have a victim mentality, you're playing the victim card. Right. I mean, that's really what he did. I mean, in so many different ways during that press conference. which you would never see out of Tom Brady and Russell Wilson. You're right.
He went on a diatribe for like 20 minutes.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. You know, the relationship with Matt LaFleur, I was told by multiple players, he just kind of tolerates Matt LaFleur. You know, I don't think it's nearly as great as many in the local media would lead you to believe. You know, what's Matt LaFleur going to say at the podium? Like, of course, he's going to say nothing but gushing things about Aaron Rodgers. Like, I think it's fine. I think it's okay. I think Aaron Rodgers is at a point where, similar to Mike McCarthy, he's going to do what he wants at the line of scrimmage. That's what he's doing. I mean, Matt LaFleur has his offense, but Aaron Rodgers has his offense. I mean, Marquez Valdes-Scantling told me, you know, on the record, I did a profile with him this offseason. Like, there's two playbooks in Green Bay. There's Matt LaFleur, there's Aaron Rodgers, and Aaron Rodgers, he might audible to a play from 2014 when you were in high school. He's done that for some guys, and they don't know what the hell he's talking about. Also, it's a reason he won MVP. I mean, his memory is insane. There's nobody like it. But I do think, you know, it's a fine relationship. I think the relationship that he really does cherish is with Nate Hackett, the offensive coordinator. It's kind of described to me almost like a lovey-dovey kind of relationship. Like, they're really, really close in the meetings. I mean, they're really tight. So that's good. LaFleur, Gutekunst, you know, I don't think that's ever going to be repaired. I think that's done. That's dead. And I still think he's gone after this season. I think they're kind of playing out the string right now.
I was in Vegas this weekend, and I had a security guard that was taking me, you know, from place to place, which is sometimes happens when I'm at events. And he was a Packer fan, and he was like a season ticket holder. And he said, Favre and Rodgers, like, what's in the water? He goes, explain to me why we get the guys that threaten retirement. We get these guys that hate the front office. And the only thing I could muster was, well, there's no other team in town. It's almost a high school town more than a college town. It's so small. And the players are, to some degree, trapped. And so there's a little bit of an angst being a Packer quarterback because you don't have a normal life. If you quarterback, even in a city like Detroit with multiple pro teams, you go live out in the burbs, you can hide. So there is sort of this messiah complex in Green Bay where you are the economy, not just the quarterback, you are the economy. And it is weird. If I told you in the last 20 years, there's two quarterbacks that basically threatened retirement, were very difficult, and despite the fact they had a really good organization that drafted well, were perpetually unhappy within their organization. And it would be one team. It would be the Green Bay Packers. Do you have a theory on kind of Favre and Rodgers? Because I've said this, Aaron's becoming Brett, going public too much. I'm half in, I'm half out. I've got my own playbook. You mentioned that. So did Favre. Like, what is the psychology when you were at the Milwaukee Journal? Like, you roll it out there, because when the guy asked me over the weekend, that's the best I could come up with.
And it is funny because that's what he despised early in his career. Aaron Rodgers hated it. He hated how Brett Favre got special treatment, how Brett Favre had his own locker, was separate from the other guys. Like, when Aaron Rodgers was the backup, he was one of the guys. I was an intern in Green Bay back in 06, 07, you know, still in college. I just wanted to cover the team, lived out of a hotel working for the Sean O'Leader, I think. And I talked to Aaron Rodgers all the time, and you could just see he was more down to earth. He was one of the guys. I mean, a lot of the younger players on that team gravitated to Aaron Rodgers, like Brett Favre's missing OTAs, stuff like that. Aaron Rodgers didn't like the fact that Brett Favre was seeking special treatment and got that special treatment. And then he became what he despised. Like I said, I mean, he became that over time. And I think a lot of it does have to do with the town. And trust me, I lived in Green Bay for 5 years. I freaking loved it. I could have lived there my whole life. Friends for life there. The people are amazing. You know, I don't know what he's talking about trashing it as a vacation spot, man. You got to get to Door County. It's beautiful up there.
Yeah.
The Bluff, unreal, unreal place to live. But I'll say this. There was my ex-girlfriend. I remember one time we went to the movies, and God, what was the one with Jake Gyllenhaal? Oh, I can't remember the name. But the only people at this movie were me, my ex-girlfriend, Aaron Rodgers, Seneca Wallace, and Seneca Wallace's wife, I think. Nobody else even there. I mean, there's Green Bay in a nutshell. Like, night out, that what he's doing. I think that lifestyle kind of gets old after a while, right? You can only have so many steak dinners at Chives in Suamico. You know, he's gone through the celebrity girlfriends. He's gone through that lifestyle. He surrounds himself with celebrities. He wants that lifestyle. You're not going to get it in Wisconsin.
When you talk to people now, obviously now you have you're on the subscription world, not the newspaper space. But when you talk to those guys, and I don't know how chummy or friendly you guys are. I mean, it's a competitive space. There's a lot of guys out there. The Packers are a national brand. But there does reach a point where, I mean, people just get tired of people, no matter how beautiful they are, how attractive they are. Do you think we've crossed, there's been a tipping point? The 50-50 line to me was it, that the fans there are now more tolerating Aaron than loving him. And the media similarly understands this is who he is. Everybody kind of wants it to end now. Media fans.
I'd say in terms of media, you know, there are some people, Tom Silverstein, number one, he was my coworker. Fantastic job. Still, I mean, he's unbelievably objective. Media-wise, I mean, I don't think they're tired of him. I think there's some really close relationships there. And that, you know, the coverage is often with a few, and I'm not going to lump everybody together. Like I said, there's some people who do a fantastic job. Through this all was very pro 12. He's very good at cultivating those relationships.
He is.
I think that he wasn't expecting when that report went out, Yahoo Sports, Charles Robinson, he wants Brian Gutekunst fired. I don't think he expected it to be whatever, 70-30 pro team. You know, I think people are like, all right, Aaron, you know, there's the door. Don't let it hit you on the way out. I had people reaching out to me left and right, sending DMs, apologizing that they were trashing me a couple of years ago with that Bleacher Report story.
Really?
And it's anecdotal, but yeah, a lot of people came out of the woodworks like, okay, we're seeing it now. I'm sick of this guy. Like, are you in? Are you out? Now, Brett Favre wanted back in. Aaron Rodgers wanted out. So I think a lot of fans were, okay, enough's enough. But now that he's back and he's really, really good and he's throwing touchdowns at Lambeau Field, they're going to root for him. They're going to cheer him on. You know, they're not going to be booing Aaron Rodgers at any point this season. But I think they kind of get it that he is a complicated fella. He is who he is. He's not going to change. This is probably it. And there was more of a connection with Brett Favre than there ever was with Aaron Rodgers with the fans.
Yeah, the you know, their draft, they got Amari Rodgers as a slot receiver, who Randall Cobb was about 7 years ago, so I think he'll play. This morning, if I asked you, I mean, I've watched every team play in preseason. Baltimore, Buffalo look as good as anybody. Green Bay's fine. They're good. I mean, you obviously can't play Jordan Love during the season. It won't sit well with Aaron. You can't do a Trey Lance Garoppolo or you just can't do it. It's just, or Gutekunst will be persona non grata beyond what he is now. But I would say this, you just said something. You said Aaron is really good at creating relationships with members of the media to get his message out. Have you found in the last year that Gutekunst behind the scenes has been developing relationships to get his message out? Or is that not the way he operates?
I don't see that at all. And he probably should play that game a little bit more. Somebody with the team should play that game. They don't talk to anybody,
really
in terms of the power brokers. I really don't think so. You know, I think that they, as much as Aaron Rodgers is the one saying that there's wisdom in silence and, you know, he wanted this to all be behind closed doors, I don't think the Packers are sabotaging themselves here. Are the Packers really, the day of the draft, you know, telling Adam Schefter, and Adam Schefter's amazing. I mean, I consider McRandy, I don't know who he talked to. Are the Packers, though, are they telling everybody what's going on behind closed doors to trash themselves? Like, they don't leak anything. They don't talk. That's how it's been for a while now, back to Ted Thompson. So I think a lot of that does come from the Rodgers camp and trying to get it, you know, really get a message out, get a narrative out, you know,
yes.
the no weapons thing. I mean, you know, we can debate that, but that was a storyline when we're talking about who's around Aaron Rodgers and the fact that they don't give him weapons. We're not talking about Aaron Rodgers not selling out at the goal line on third goal and dropping to 1-4 in the NFC Championship game. I think he was really smart that right after that game to put his own future into jeopardy. And he shocked the floor. He shocked the Packers. They weren't expecting him to just drop that bomb the night of that loss.
But yes,
he knew by doing that, we're talking about his future. Yes. I'm sure on your show, you're talking about his future the next day, probably. Yeah.
No, it's a great point, Tyler, that was a huge play that he could have gone either way. And again, he's smart enough to talk about his future after that game. And it's a firebomb. And so, and I remember the next day, what did I talk about? That comment. I didn't talk about that play. So there was the LaFleur call. There was the Aaron judgment. There were the coach and the quarterback deserved a lot of heat, and the coach got all of it. And that's another way of Aaron. I think, you know, again, when Bob McGinn, a Hall of Fame writer, said 15 years ago or 13 years ago, Aaron manipulates people, he spotted it early. Listen, next year his cap hit is $46 million and Jordan Love's is $3 million. We're not stupid here. Green Bay would ideally – now when Aaron leaves next year, if he does, it's a $20 million hit or thereabouts. But the bottom line is if you could save $22 million with Jordan Love, that's three players. I mean, that is an edge rusher. That's another receiver. That's a number three or number two corner. So, I mean, I think the writing is on the wall. Back to your first point, which is we all kind of know this is a one and done. I do want to talk about a couple of things that are interesting in your purview because you also have good contacts with the Bears, and that's the primary rival in that division. Mitch Trubisky, by the way, looked great for Buffalo. And the Andy Dalton situation is a bit of a mess because the offensive line's in a total rebuild. I blame Ryan Pace, the GM, I have two people in Chicago who I lean in, two reporters I lean on, and both just don't think he's terribly smart. They really don't. I mean, if you go look at their draft picks, there's a lot of misses, Trubisky being the primary one. When you cover a Packers Bears game, you have all sorts of people that cover Chicago that you know as well. I've always been a fan of Matt Nagy, but boy, when you watch Buffalo play Chicago, Buffalo is simply more crisp. They're more efficient. How much of the Chicago mess is Matt Nagy?
I think plenty. I think that he doesn't really seem to have his finger on the pulse of the position we really thought he did. Even obviously Trubisky is a mistake. I mean, goes without saying, but to pull him when they did last season, kind of strange, kind of early. And then to ride out Nick Foles as long as they did when, you know, getting the ball past midfield was an odyssey for this offense. And the only reason they go back to Trubisky is because Foles gets hurt. They sneak into the playoffs. They keep their jobs. It was just a bizarre, strange year. And I think that's why they had the offseason they had. I tried to really get to the bottom of their hunt for a quarterback this offseason. Between him and Ryan Pace, I mean, they knew they were lucky to have their jobs. Like, I mean, a wins over what? Houston and Jacksonville saved their jobs. And they knew they had to get a quarterback, and they tried everything. I mean, they really thought they were going to have a shot at Watson. Ben Roethlisberger was in the picture. Somebody told me they probably placed a call to the Packers for Aaron Rodgers. They were trying everything. And Russell Wilson, they really thought they had that deal done. Like, that was close. They didn't get Russell Wilson. So they end up with Justin Fields in a roundabout way. Signing Dalton allows them to not get, you know, hit up too bad for draft picks when they had to move up to take Fields because they can kind of sell Dalton to an extent better than you can sell Foles. But trust me, they tried everybody this offseason, everybody.
What is your gut feeling? I do think Dalton will start the first week. I think there's been a promise made behind the scenes. In fact, somebody I know that is a pretty, he's close to the organization. He's told me on a couple occasions, there's kind of a handshake agreement, kind of an understand understanding Dalton starts in week one. That's my take. If I said to you, when does Justin Fields play? When would be your guess?
I've heard similar things too, that Andy Dalton, I mean, you heard it from him too, but you are what you are. We all saw that performance against Buffalo. It was ugly. I mean, this is what Andy Dalton is at this point. I think he probably starts and loses, you know, a game, two games, and they have no choice but to go to Justin Fields. I don't see how you can just roll with Andy Dalton for too long when you take a Justin Fields and everybody in the city wants him to play. People in the locker room are going to want him to play, you know, and as you know, I mean, that's really who you're trying to win over. Teammates in the locker, if you can get veterans to believe that Justin Fields is the answer quarterback, I think that's probably when they make the move. And if Andy Dalton goes out there, throws a couple picks, looks like the same player we've seen, you know, good, never great, you have to take a shot at great.
All right, Tyler, it's great talking to you. Let's go back to watching the second half of the Chargers and the 49ers, and thanks for coming on.
Thanks so much for having me, Colin. Great to see you, man.
All right, Tyler Dunn, thank you. Jake Paul and Kirk Herbstreit are two of our podcasts this week. Sign up at The Volume, at Twitter, YouTube page, Instagram, rate, review, subscribe. We'll talk soon.